Let me say that I usually work in grand unification, cosmology signatures and stuff like that. But I chose to talk on this rather unusual topic because I thought I'd get feedback from people who know things better than me. So the title is, as it says, and it's an unusual possibility for explaining dark energy. And I would say while it sounds unusual, it actually is an attempt to recover an explanation for dark energy entirely in terms of known physics, rather than invoking newer frameworks of physics such as string theory or whatever. So you will find that actually the explanation is very mundane, but it does require extending the mass spectrum of known particles to very, very small values, sub-electron volt values. But that is also being talked about freely these days, partly because of neutrinos. So that is going to be the core of the talk. And I'm sorry, but I meant to, of course, rework the talk and add a few things, but which I couldn't get to do. So it has a wrong date line on it, and I didn't have the time to do that. But I guess that's
right. You were just two hours ago found out, or an hour ago found out that he's giving a talk now.
So yeah, I thought I'd come here and then check the timetable and then see when my talk is. And while I was eating my lunch, I found out the talk was now. Okay, now let's see how I go forward. There we go. Oh, I got something. Oops, I started off openoffice.org.
Try the arrow keys, I
Okay, it looks good. Yeah. So first I just wanted to show one slide of what we now consider the standard model of cosmology, which I call tentative, because although we freely quote, including myself, to everyone that there's 20-odd% of dark matter and 3% of baryons and 70% of dark energy, we find that the issue is not really closed, and maybe Manoj can tell me if I'm completely off. People who actually work in analyzing the data may know better. What I'm going to live off is that the dark energy equation of state is not P equal to minus rho, but closer to being P equal to minus 2/3 rho. Okay. So I probably don't need to show all this. And so this is roughly the summary of what we know now as combination of what WMAP and galaxy survey data say. And all of these seem to point to the fact that equation of state for the dark energy is close to being minus 0.9 or even less. And in if you take only the supernovae data, then it is even less than minus 1. But and at present, to the extent I know, there is some tension that exists between the SN1A data and the WMAP itself. WMAP wants W to live close to minus 0.95, whereas supernovae data wants it less than minus 1. But what we observe is that WMAP group's own analysis always just works with lambda CDM. They assume P equal to minus rho and then work from there. What I'm going to argue is that this issue is not completely closed. And one can reassess the current fitting of the data. And this is the summary of, this is the outline of the talk. I'll first go over the reassessment of the current model and then try to explain what the idea is. If you have relic fermions, which became very cold and underwent a phase transition, to form a ferromagnetic state, the spins all aligned, they would have to have anomalous magnetism so that they would be uncharged but magnetic. And if their magnetisms aligned, they would form a domain structure similar to ferromagnetism. Fortunately, we do have a model in condensed matter physics called Stoner criterion for free fermion ferromagnetism, and that is what I will try to use. Okay, so now let us go over the reassessment of the tentative standard model. And I checked some of the recent publications this year after the 3-year survey, and what these references tend to point out is that things are not completely closed if you take into account galaxy data as well. And this group's analysis shows that the peak value, the most likely value for them is in fact less than 0.9, okay, somewhere up between, say 0.86 or something like that. Basically there is a degeneracy in the parameters W and fraction that is in dark energy, fraction of density, energy density in dark energy. And you can see that this black curve is the most preferred set of values. It certainly passes through minus 1 nicely, but there it doesn't point to 9.95 as the contribution of dark energy. It is somewhere in between. But if you look further down the further up the graph, then values of W between minus 1 and 0.5 are very well allowed, provided the contribution of dark energy is somewhat higher in this analysis. Now, the most comprehensive analysis that I found, which does not assume anything else, but directly analyzes the WMAP data purely to extract the possible equation of state for the dark energy component and also check for its possible evolution in time as a function of Z, is the work of these people who are my neighbors. They are in Pune. Jassar and Bagla are in Allahabad and Padmanabhan is in Pune. They actually, what I have extracted here is from a slightly older publication, 2004. They haven't yet come out with a comprehensive answer after the WMAP 3, so I thought it doesn't matter. But they do have a much longer physical review paper in 2005. I'll show one slide from that. What these people do is an exercise where they model a time-varying W, so as Z becomes large, this ratio is 1, and you get W0 plus W1. And when Z is small, you just get W0. So in this model, for instance, if I set this number to be closer to minus 2/3 or something like that, what I want is that early times it is closer to being minus 2/3, and at present time it may even be crumbling away, the walls could be going away. What we find is that these possibilities are not ruled out because the value for the slope W1 is very large. It varies in a large range. And the W0 goes all the way from minus 0.7 to minus 0.15 for them. There are some priors, but they have done a more comprehensive analysis. What I'm trying to argue is that it is not outlandish to believe that an independent analysis of the data without using priors may well lead to this, and then may lead to reassessment of the CDM model itself. Instead of this being a rigid lambda CDM, we may have a CDM with a varying dark energy. So here again, there is some analysis of, as a function of Z, how the contribution of rho dark energy varies. And there is a possibility of both it growing as well as depleting. And what I have in mind is something which is large, around 10 million years ago. It begins to capture all the energy density because there are domain walls. Domain walls tend to act somewhat like cosmological constant, and they begin to dominate the energy density of the universe. So they would be subdominant at the time they form, very soon become dominant, and then later, if the walls are not stable, they would be crumbling. So the contribution can vary from being, so this is normalized to its contribution today, Z equal to 0. But it could be, it could have been larger at earlier times and then depleted to the value today. So there is some more analysis of W versus W prime and so on. Since the graphs are not so good, I will not try to go into detail. So there is also a later paper in 2005 where they actually carry out detailed analysis for how W should evolve as a function of time. This is the 2005 graph where they say that there is a large degeneracy between value of the Hubble constant today and the contribution from the omega non-relativistic. Now you may wonder why this is important, but if omega nr changes, then omega dE changes. And the point is that we tend to believe that it's somewhere here today, with Hubble around 72. But you can see that we can easily live with Hubble smaller values, or Hubble smaller values closer to 60, and larger contribution from omega non-relativistic is not ruled out. So I think the pink ones have galaxy data, and green is combination of both galaxy and WMAP. So there are degeneracies in the possible values of parameters. This was highlighted very well, in fact, some time ago, in a set of three independent papers, oldest one being by Batty, Bucher, and Spergel. Batty has gone on to do more work, but I'm not summarizing it here. They suggest that there is solid dark matter, and by which they mean the kind of things I meant, extended objects which fill space in such a way that they somehow simulate a negative value of W. And in fact, even the domain walls that I have in mind, if they are on very small scale, like centimeter scale, cubic cc scale, they will actually behave more like with W equal to minus 0.8 or 0.9. So one has to work that out. But unlike sparse domain walls, which lead to an equation of state W equal to minus 2/3, you can easily have W equal to minus 0.8 if the domain walls are very closely packed. And that is what these people refer to as solid dark matter. Friedland, Murayama, and Perlstein, they had some favorite model in mind at 100 keV scale from some Majorana model. And they did also an analysis much earlier, and they verified that so long as the domain walls are lower than that scale in terms of tension, they do not actually conflict with the WMAP fluctuation data. Finally, the most direct question is title of these people's paper in 2004, which says, are domain walls ruled out? And their answer is that actually there is better map fit for WMAP data with lower values of Hubble parameter of 0.65 and with higher values of omega matter at 0.53. And it is consistent with this XMM Newton, which is a look at the closer, which is a look at the near hydrogen clouds, the X-rays coming from there, which essentially tells you about distribution of galaxies and star-forming regions in the galaxy-forming regions in the nearby. So unformed parts of galaxy, which accounts for some of the missing baryons. So if you put together these, then you actually get what Jassal, Bagla, and Padmanabhan get, almost exactly their parameter degeneracy range, has been claimed earlier by Silk and Group. So I will just show briefly their plots. This is a plot where they show that if you assume domain walls which are sufficiently light, like the ones I have in mind, there is a perfect fit between the WMAP data and the lambda CDM, with small departure only in this region at the small angles.
Are you going to tell us in more detail what the domain wall picture is you have in mind? Or is that
great. So if I have convinced you that this issue is still open, the value of W, then I'll go on to the ferromagnetism. Right? So let's go to that. So here is the main idea. How do you at all get domain walls which are very light and which don't conflict with cosmology in the sense of, usually people always thought domain walls are a problem, but if they're very light, they don't. So what we have in mind is a relic fermion species, which should be neutral, but it possesses a large magnetic moment. It should enter a collective ferromagnetic state, and this ferromagnetic state develops a domain wall structure, which, because the whole range of energies is very low, and because it forms at very, very low temperature, the decay of the walls, which is governed essentially by tunneling, is very slow in billions of years. And so if they are around for 5 or 7 billion years, then we are done.
The picture that, this is consistent with isotropy and homogeneity because there's supposed to be lots of small domains in your
domain? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So how big would they be?
In my case, in my model, they are at centimeter scale. The domains are very small. In Murayama, and my fermion, the tension, wall tension is also comparable to the dark energy contribution, 0.03 eV to the fourth to cube, let's say, the tension in walls. Murayama and company have, in fact, 100 electron volt, what was the number, kEV. And they said that even gets away with not conflicting with fluctuation data. So what I need is very small mass scale, which now we can be more courageous about because we have neutrino masses. We need an intrinsic magnetic, actually anomalous magnetic moment for the relic species. We may need, if you will see in the fittings, I may need a slightly overabundance of these species compared to photons, so that I account for all the dark energy. And the main theoretical ingredient I'm going to pick from condensed matter physics is what is called band ferromagnetism. This is ferromagnetism of freely flowing fermions, unlike Heisenberg, which is for fixed fermions at individual sites. So the band ferromagnetism was developed by Stoner as another kind of ansatz. The ansatz is that the spin up and spin down fermion energies are split by a large amount. So it suddenly favors much more being in one kind of spin state than the other. And the reason that condensed matter physicists basically give in the context of screen Coulomb potential is that if the fermions have a repulsive force between them, like if there were electrons in a lattice, then there would be screen Coulomb potential. If you have a large enough density, then they would come rather close, and the repulsive energy would raise the energy of that particular state. But if due to Fermi statistics they are pushed apart, then in fact that reduces the repulsive energy, and it helps. So if they are in same spin state, if they are in same state, then there is exclusion principle keeps them apart, and in fact leads to reduction in that particular repulsive energy. That is the argument. So assuming that, you assume that in any given domain, either it is energy up which is favorable or energy down which is favorable. So the two get split by a large amount proportional to n up versus n down. So in a typical domain where everything is aligned up, this n up is a large fraction of n, and it alters the spectrum of up fermions versus down fermions. I is the parameter that was introduced by Stoner. It is supposed to be independent of k. And once you do that, the formula that I've written on the earlier page for the susceptibility, which is the usual Pauli paramagnetism, this gets modified in the denominator to have a factor 1 minus I times the density of states at the Fermi surface divided by number density, which can be rewritten in terms of the magnetic moment for these fermions, mu subscript f, and the usual Pauli susceptibility times I. So from this expression, one sees that a residual intrinsic chi remains if this is large enough. And that means that if I is bigger than, so in the form that is written in the middle, if I is bigger than 4/3 of the otherwise Fermi energy, then you can end up in a state where fermions will begin to align in order to try to overcome the repulsive Coulomb energy. And that would lead to a ferromagnetic state. This is the idea of bent ferromagnetism. Maybe it's a bit fast.
So I don't know, the normal thing in a ferromagnet is that it's a Coulomb exchange energy, which is...
That's right, yeah.
That's not the picture here.
Well, essentially it is the same. Essentially it's the same, but the point is that it even applies to spins that are not fixed, not localized at sites, but for a band.
Well, that means you need these things to be degenerate, and you need them to have an interaction like Coulomb.
Repulsive interaction.
And so these are not standard model particles.
So now what I'm going to propose is that firstly they are neutral, and secondly, to make the model absolutely minimal, one can think of generalizations, but to keep the model absolutely simple, I considered the repulsive energy which itself arises from magnetic repulsion. Okay, so if they are going to be aligned, then they better be at a number density and magnetic moment value such that that state actually is preferred by Fermi statistics. So you can put both the conditions of matching the Stoner criterion and requiring the I value to be large enough. So you will just see next what I am proposing. Okay, so here after summarizing the Stoner criterion, I'm just coming here to summarize what setting I have. I assume that the dark energy becomes comparable to non-relativistic matter approximately 7 billion years ago and so on. And I take the number density of fermions, these fermions to be the same as photon number, which is this is the standard number in EV units, times a fudge factor epsilon, which I may need to adjust, but it turns out now I understand by talking to lot of people that there isn't much leeway in adjusting the epsilon factor because the number of relativistic degrees of freedom is well constrained both by BBN as well as WMAP. But if these fermions were not thermal at the time of decoupling, then I may still get away with having a larger number relative to photons for these fermions.
Yeah, I really have a clear idea what the model is.
So maybe I go through the model first. Right. So what we assume is that firstly the fermions have a magnetic anomalous magnetic moment.
Before you tell us what the fermions are, just what are the new particles? Is there new fermions? Is there a new force too?
There is a new Coulomb force.
There's a new gauge field and there's a new fermion
that is neutral under that gauge charge, but carries an anomalous induced magnetic moment.
And what do you need the gauge field for?
Well, I do need this magnetism to be a long range force, the repulsion between.
So some level of the fermion has to cover.
That's right.
Is it, but it's just saying it's not an electric charge?
It's not an electric charge, yeah.
And that is anything else? Or just
no, that's all.
And the main walls you're going to talk about at the end of the day, was the energy that's dark energy though in the walls or was it the volume?
It's in the walls. The volumes are at the lower energy relative to the walls.
There's going to be a volume energy too, right?
There's going to be a volume energy too. But that's what we assume to be the same as the normal relativistic gas.
So the equation state for the walls you're saying is W minus 2/3, but what would be the equation state for the volume energy? Why isn't it just cosmological constant?
Volume energy should, so these are after all free flowing fermions.
So there's a condensation energy too, right? If I take a ferromagnet, just binding energy of that.
That is true.
And so why doesn't that, is there an argument as to why that's, I don't know what that would be like because
one. Yeah. That's a good point.
But the thought is that the...
I'm assuming that the excess of the wall energy over this background energy is what is acting as the dark energy. Right, so...
So how do these things get produced in the first place?
I don't know anything. I'm just trying to model down upwards. So once I get the physical requirements in place, that they get into ferromagnetic state, I begin to think of what they are or when they get produced and detail.
So they have to, you assume there should be some interaction with the standard bond that you would pop, because you're populating them as the same number density as...
Oh, that was just assumption that because in absence of anything else. I have no idea what the numbers would be. So,
you don't need the numbers to be what it is.
Sorry?
You don't need the numbers to be?
I do need. That I derive afterwards from the requirements that they act as dark energy. And the only, really broad constraint is that the fraction of relativistic matter, which is in the form of relativistic particles, has to be less than 0.3%. This is what I read up in particle data book. The potential hot dark matter candidate, totally including photons, cannot be more than 0.03%. So I just decided to pitch the contribution of these fermions to a value that remains, they are massive, but I want them to remain less than 0.3%. And this is the constraint that I have to use, and this remains less than 10 to the 4, the fudge factor than that. But I don't know how much of that I must use, and if I have to use a large factor, then I have to think of details of how they are produced, at what epoch they come into existence, and so on. For the time being, I just need to know that they are present ever since the time of decoupling of photons with plasma. And okay. So, there is a very simple calculation in condensed matter physics books that shows that the exchange interaction, which induces split in the single particle energy of same spin electrons, can be actually same order as the value of Fermi energy. And in a free gas model, one can show that local density deficit of fermions that are identical quantum numbers can be as large as the normal density itself, the delta nu, the local deficit in a region near the near a particular fermion. The deficit of other fermions of same quantum numbers can be as large as the normal density itself, and this is the deficit density that contributes to single particle energy. If you have a long range interaction which then prefers that the deficit actually helps the total energy, the ground state system.
So can you explain that again? So it's there's a what exactly
the deficit? So if I just think of two fermions, several fermions, all with identical quantum numbers, okay, then they should be apart. They should not be at the same place. They should not occupy same physical space by exclusion principle. The argument is that alone forces in the neighborhood of a given fermion, a local deficit, which can of the same spin fermions, which can be as large as the density itself, some large fraction of the normal value of n.
But in these condensed matter arguments, that's a situation where the fermions are actually non-relativistic and coupled, carry a monopole charge for the forces involved, right? So when this
Just the anti-symmetrized wave function, even without any forces. So this particular number is found in many condensed matter books just to demonstrate why exchange energy can be large. This is just a local deficit based on putting an anti-symmetric wave function in the free fermion model.
When the surprise, if you thought it was magnetic monopoles that were lining up, or magnetic dipoles that were lining up, it would be the energy be too small.
Right. So you multiply by the energy factors after this.
So forget this slide. In your Stoner criterion, was that based on a Coulomb exchange interaction?
No. First part is just the exchange, the exclusion principle, Fermi statistics. So I made the simplest assumption because I didn't want to invoke any newer forces. In principle, you can now assume similar to the Coulomb force, you can assume maybe some kind of a damped scalar force. I mean, I heard a lot of people at the conference talking about all kinds of. My model is really, really extremely economical, but anyway. So I can always make it a bit more extended. But for the time being, I want to assume that the very magnetic moment itself is the repulsive energy which is reduced by then being pushed apart due to Fermi statistics. And so I assume that the interaction energy between two fermions of same spin is governed by this equation, where mu zero, because I'm using FKS units, this is the magnetic moment of the fermion. This mu is just left over from the time for the neutrinos. Magnetic moment squared times this deficit energy density. So basically you assume that the energy goes as, the force between them goes as 1 over r cube, energy goes as 1 over r cube because force goes as 1 over r squared. And this n has the correct dimensions to reproduce mu 1, mu 2 times 1 over r cube as the value of the energy.
The mass of these things is 10 minus 3 electrons.
That's right, yeah, or smaller.
So the picture is that the chemical potential for them is something like their mass, and for the whole history of the universe, they've not been generated, but just now the temperature is low enough that it's.
That's right, absolutely. That's the picture. Now, the question is whether you can self-consistently show whether such coupling alone, without any Coulomb potential, can actually reproduce the Stoner split in the energy spectrum. And this question was fortunately examined by one of my colleagues, S.S. Jha, and another friend of his, and they published it for some reason in a mathematical and general section of Journal of Physics. Their conclusion is that, so they did a Hartree-Fock ground state for non-relativistic fermions. What they find is that the value of, so this R star Sn is essentially a measure of the value of the number density. So R is the inverse of n to the power 1/3. So what is the critical value of R star such that the value of the ferromagnetic state to the non-ferromagnetic state, this ratio, becomes less than 1, okay? And in fact goes negative as it becomes, as the exchange energy becomes large. So they find in this purely magnetic model without any other forces at all, firstly that you can indefinitely increase the value of number density and the value of energy would keep going down. Beta is some parameter in the minimization of the energy, so it's just ansatz dependent thing. But as you change the value of beta, for any one value of beta, you start at, for very low densities, you start somewhere here. Normal state would be preferred. But as you increase the number density, at some point you would go in fact negative. So once you go negative, of course, there would be unhalted collapse, but we don't have to think of those situations. We still probably live somewhere here. The calculation is non-relativistic, and I hope to repeat it, but I don't expect that there should be very big changes. And so this particular gamma squared that I introduced as a coupling between same spin fermions, multiplied by the energy density deficit is what would be the total single particle energy that Stoner wants in his model, which would be resulting from this exchange repulsion. Now all I do is put these values in the Stoner criterion, which says that the I is greater than 4/3 of EF, 4/3 of Fermi energy. So here is Fermi energy for relativistic particles. And I have parameters G and N and possible excess abundance factor epsilon. So if I do just this and ask for whether I can get a band ferromagnetic state for these cosmic fermions, I find that if they are really having a very strong repulsion, then this blue line, sorry, then the red line, then the left of anything left of this red line, which means values of n in EV less than 10 to the minus, anything between minus 2, minus 6, you know, you start here. And this is the value of the anomalous magnetic moment, G, relative to E over m of that particular particle itself. Anywhere, so 1 is somewhere here, and you can have smaller values of G. But all of this region would give rise to band ferromagnetism in principle. If you choose I equal to EF, then it is this, and if you choose I much less than EF, then you still get band ferromagnetism. And then the S, the things with S subscript, however I assume maximum possible abundance without conflicting with the bound on how much hot dark matter fraction I have. So these are just as indicators. But in this values of mass range, and with numbers related to photon not very large, and with magnetic anomalous magnetic moment factor anywhere between 1 and 10 to the minus 5, you can reproduce Stoner criterion for these very cold fermions.
What was the abundance compared to photons?
So the factor simply was that the total contribution of relativistic species should be less than 0.3%.
Right.
So 0.003 is the omega of these fermions.
Now. So compared to photons, I don't know, the 10 to the minus 4 or something there?
Yeah.
So there's more in this than there is in photons?
Sure. Yeah.
Like only like factor 10 or something?
Yeah, it can be up to factor 10. Without conflicting with.
And that is that you go back to the synthesis and then you want to.
That's right. Yeah. Provided they are thermalized. If they're not thermalized, then the constraint can be even simpler, more relaxed. Right. So for some time I lived in the fantasy that there are neutrinos, but they cannot be. Because actually I need very large magnetic moment. I don't need to go through this slide. It will not fit neutrinos because the magnetic moment required is very, very large on the scale of.
You're just making up nuclear fields anyway. Why can't you just have a nuclear field covered?
That's right. So this is when I was still trying to be so minimalist that I had everything from known species and known forces. Right. So then I, going back to the phenomenological analysis, I just want to show that it doesn't work. A completely minimal thing doesn't work. Okay, so going back to this, we now want this energy to really dominate and reproduce the contribution that we seem to think is dark energy. So I require that energy per unit volume, which is I is the single particle energy excess times the deficit density, etc., should become greater than the rho critical, one half of rho critical today, one half, because that's the epoch where I'm assuming dark energy and dark matter contributions are equal. Some factor relative to today's temperature and the temperature when that began and so on. And requiring that it does make up half of the, that it does make up and give us the dark energy, as we observe, leads to these constraints. The most plain vanilla and assuming nothing excess gives this line. So things left of this line would both enter ferromagnetic state and would have energy excess large enough in domain walls relative to the bulk domains to reproduce dark energy. This does require the mass of fermions to be very small, 10 to the minus 12, let us say, electron volt, and some anomalous magnetic moment, some 1/10 of the normal value. But if you, that's right. So dark energy, if you allow for larger abundance for these relative to photons, then you get the blue curve, which is here, and everything left of it would be allowed. So say value of mass is around 10 to the minus 6 eV, and some magnetic moment here would be acceptable. And the only possible confirmation, which is the most obvious one, is I have tried to make some simple model of these walls, which I haven't yet put out. This is still work under progress. By the way, whatever I have here, most of it is in last year's PASPAS proceedings, an AIP proceeding volume, the PASPAS in Korea. So it is there, and it's on the archive also. But I have to do more work. But here I'm just showing for the sake of argument that effectively we do want, after all, since this model claims there are domain walls, and the domains are not stable because they're SU2 walls, so they're not topologically stable. So they would keep decaying by tunneling. So what that means is that the value of W should now be reducing back towards zero. Okay. So I'm just trying to show that for Z equal to 2 to Z today, I mean, mimicking the x-axis range of Padmanabhan group's analysis, I would expect that W goes like this, rises towards being 1 from being minus 0.8 in the distant past, at around Z equal to 2. And the other kind of confirmation, intriguing possibility, is that this new U1 that I have does mix with the photons. Now I put here a number 10 to the minus 3, but I learned in this recent conference that this is tighter now, it is more like 10 to the minus 7 or something like that. So the mixing between ordinary photon and this new photon, there could be a mixing between the two. What happens is that all these domains would cancel their magnetic fields on the average, but an RMS value could be left over. And that RMS value over 100 kilopascal, what I've taken, 1 megaparsec scale, can be large enough, and including the mixing with the ordinary photons, they could actually be the seeds for the intergalactic magnetic fields. Because the seeds required are in the range of 10 to the minus 30 Tesla. Really tiny seeds are required. So even with very small mixing, in principle, the RMS value starting from CC size domains could really reproduce the seed magnetic field lines to produce the observed intergalactic magnetic fields through dynamo effects. And that is about all. So what we have attempted to do is simply fit the theory of itinerant fermion ferromagnetism as a possible relic fermions, which should be neutral but with anomalous magnetic moment. Neutrinos don't work, and it does require a new species which should be very light, about 10 to the minus 10 eV range, so give or take a few powers of 10. It will require a new U1 in the hidden sector, and that's where it stands right now. Thanks.
I'm going to ask you this question about the number density again, because in typically okay. When you have like such large number density, that means they were in equilibrium with the standard model for a long time. Because if they were not, then they should have gotten diluted. But that automatically means that, you know, you should have some sort of a coupling like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe not be FF kind of coupling, but some sort of a coupling has to exist to keep them in equilibrium. Right? Otherwise, why are the number densities so large? If they were only in equilibrium sometime way back in the past, then they should have just gotten diluted. So I think it automatically comes with some sort of a coupling with the standard model, which might be good or bad.
Some of these mirror models, they seem to really do everything by wishful thinking. They seem to have no.
They all do have couplings because they want to explain.
The only coupling they have is between neutrinos and between photons.
Yeah, well, all neutrino oscillations. And that's useful because even at time
they peg. So, because their motivation is that. What I'm saying is, in their models, there is just no communication between the two sectors except through the neutrino and the photon.
Yeah, but even.
And that would be induced essentially by quantum gravity effect, there's nothing else. So such thing would be possible in principle. And just to take your argument at face value.
No, like when they do the mirror dark matter, right?
Yeah.
There is a coupling which makes oscillations between the stellar, the mirror, and the normal. And even a very small amount of coupling is enough. Like theta mixing can be 10 to the minus 10, and that'll populate the mirror dark matter.
Okay.
So then, you know, if you are motivated by something like creating dark matter, then you do have to have a coupling.
Okay.
I think people do that, like. So even here I'm saying you
so the number will be constrained is what you are saying. The abundance should be well constrained.
Maybe you find some natural delta for that.
Right.
Like if you look at like what it takes to like create these things.
Yeah.
In this number.
Right. Yeah. So I'm trying to think down upward, so then I will see what I can get away with or what model they would fit best in. So if the interaction with standard model is set at some intermediate scale, then of course the mixing would be large, but if it comes from a very high scale like quantum gravity scale, then the mixing can be very, very small.
Yeah, but then that will determine your abundance today.
Why is that?
Because if the mixing is very, very small,
yeah,
then at some point very early on they were in equilibrium.
Yeah.
And after that they've just been.
So there will be similar numbers.
No, the entropy will get diluted, right?
Yeah.
The standard picture.
Sure.
Where
yes,
if
yes.
You freeze
yeah.
out early, then your number density is much smaller compared to the. So that's why I'm saying having a large number density automatically means it puts some constraint.
That
the
contact was more recent.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's
interesting
because then you
yeah.
might have some natural density.
That's right. And since they are massive, they would have become really spread out if they decoupled very early.
Exactly.
Good. Okay. So I see.
Then in the bottom up philosophy, the observation you're making is that you assume that the vacuum energy, whatever it is cancelled out
yeah.
for whatever the reason is.
Yeah.
Like you're saying that the equation of state for the dark energy could have been -2/3 and the model for that would be domain walls. But then it seems like all the baggage of the fermion
was
a lot of work to get the domain walls, whereas if I just stuck a scalar field then I could probably get a domain wall. If I just stuck in a scalar field with a potential which gives me domain walls, that seems like that would be a model that would give me the domain walls with less effort. Because in the end of the day, it sounds like there's nothing. None of the fermions were having any observational role at all, except for their role in producing these domain walls.
Unless they're neutrinos.
Well, if they're neutrinos, that'd be interesting. Because
that's right. That's interesting.
So
I agree with that comment. Yeah.
So if you were to design in some U1 that was going to couple to neutrinos, then in your thing where these walls dissolve, then you might have observable signals somehow because it's neutrinos that are going to be involved rather than.
That's also true. So yeah, if it could be some kind of a contributing as a sterile neutrino, then certainly there would be a constraint on these fermions. That's what you are saying, right?
Yeah,
that would be interesting too. But see, if you put just another fundamental scalar with just a quartic coupling, I mean, that's really not a. I agree. So there is greater opportunity in this model to put constraints from known physics. When you have these fermions. But of course, if you stick in a scalar field with strain potential, then you can get domain walls without doing anything else.
Yeah, and I said that's when you said bottom up, that was my reading of you.
Okay.
Like, what am I taking from cosmology? It's domain walls.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is add on. See, what
yeah. So now maybe I'm giving the details of the domain walls. They are this effective field theory of these fermions.
Yeah.
And that's what that scalar field is.
Right.
That's it. So it's one step deeper into the down upward. Because fundamentals, nature abhors fundamental scalars.
But this extra U1 would be just so the neutrino, the Majorana or whatever, it doesn't have any magnetic moment
I didn't get into the magnetic moment thing at all, which I'm actually trying to study right now. So it's very hard. These things have been looked at for a long time. Can you have very light fermion with very large magnetic moment? And it is very difficult to do because the if the magnetic moment is large, anomalous magnetic moment, then it comes from loop diagrams which would also contribute to the mass of the particle. So if you make the magnetic moment large, then the fermion mass is also large. Except if you put some symmetries which would prevent the contribution to mass but give contribution to the anomalous magnetic moment. So these models have existed from a time when people had similar fantasies to explain for neutrinos, to explain other effects. So there are models by, I mean, Kim and not Shapoorian problem. Volochin people have these models, have to look at. I'll take off the mic.